This is the Dinner Party Download from APM. Subscribe to us wherever you get your podcasts. Let's meet our guest of honor.
All right. And this week it's Paul Feig. He is beloved for creating and producing the cult favorite TV show Freaks and Geeks, along with his friend Judd Apatow. In addition to its excellent writing and direction, the show was known for launching some huge Hollywood careers, including those of Jason Segel, James Franco, and Seth Rogen. Not bad.
Good eye. But these days, Paul's probably best known for his feature films, most of them R-rated comedies featuring female heroes, like, for instance, Bridesmaids with Kristen Wiig and Spy with Melissa McCarthy. His latest comedy is in the same vein. It's called Snatched, and it stars Amy Schumer and Goldie Hawn as a mother and daughter duo who get kidnapped while on vacation. Now, when I met with Paul, he was wearing what has become his signature outfit, which is a dapper suit.
Oh, yeah.
I asked him, what's up with that?
It's what I call the tyranny of the casual out in L.A., which is this sort of enforced, like, oh, you don't get it. Here's how actually what happened was, I mean, back after we did Freaks and Geeks, I started taking meetings because people liked the show and wanted me to work on other things. So you go to these meetings, but you meet with the suits, quote unquote, the suits.
Yeah.
The heads of everything. So there you are. And I remember sitting on the couch, and they always put you on this like really low couch where your knees are in your face, you know. And it just, you know, I don't like the power structure here. Like, they look powerful, and I look like the artist that they're just sort of, you know, prescribing things to. So I went away from that. And I always used to wear a suit and tie when I was a kid. I used to love it. So I was like, you know what? I'm going to do it again. I'm in my, you know, mid-30s now. I'm going to adult, you know, fairly successful. Let's start dressing like the enemy, basically, I thought. And so went out and got a bunch of kind of cheap suits at the mall and started going on my meetings. Well, the minute I started going on my meetings, for some reason, a memo went out around the town that they didn't want to be the suits anymore, so they were going to start dressing like the artists.
Oh, yeah.
So I get into a meeting, and I'm in my suit and tie, and they're all wearing jeans and T-shirts. And it was crazy. But here's the thing. This is the hubris of Hollywood. It wasn't like, oh, we feel weird now that we've abandoned our uniform. They immediately took on this air of superiority, and it was like, oh, look at the rube who doesn't know that, you know, he's not supposed to put on his Sunday go to meeting clothes.
Well, in a way, in the movie Snatched, you kind of are a suit in the sense that you're a producer on this project, not a writer and director as you sometimes are. Mm-hmm. But for a while, every other movie seemed to be about a, quote, man-child. And now Amy Schumer in movies like Snatched and Trainwreck kind of embodies a woman child. You know, she's an adult but hasn't really matured.
Mm-hmm.
And the disconnect is funny. It's awkward. It's sad. Why do you think this theme is such a staple of comedy? Like, why does it work?
Well, I mean, just Arrested Development in general, be it man or woman, is – I think it's relatable, weirdly, because I think most of us kind of don't want to grow up, you know, and we struggle with that. And so – It's a tough line to walk because audiences can get very impatient with somebody who can't get their life together. You know, when Katie Dippel, you know, first pitched this project to me, even before she wrote it, and then when she wrote the script, I remember going through going like, God, how do we pull this off? Because it is the hardest thing to kind of get an audience to sort of get behind the you know, the Arrested Development kind of character.
Sure.
So the minute that we found out that Amy was interested in it, it was like, oh, that's perfect, because she's like kind of one of the few people I know who can pull it off, who can be sort of bratty, and yet you find her kind of endearing at the same time. And, you know, when I did Freaks and Geeks, the fun about that is in your teens, you're allowed to be a mess. And even kind of into your 20s, you're allowed to be a mess. The minute you get into characters who are in their 30s and they're a mess, the audience gets much less patient.
Oh, so do humans, Paul. I'll tell you about that another time.
Amen to that.
Another thing that's tricky, well, in Freaks and Geeks, there's a tenderness that is juxtaposed with some raunchiness, which is a natural kind of thing that happens in high school. Kids are a little grosser than most. Mm-hmm. But in this movie, as well as Bridesmaids and some of your other R-rated movies, and these are R-rated movies, you know, there are some jokes that are pretty raunchy and raw. I'm wondering if there's a joke in any of your films that you thought maybe went too far, and in retrospect, you would maybe have excised.
No, nothing that got in. There's definitely jokes we shoot that were like, ooh, yikes, that was too much. But yeah, the thing is, you really don't know. I mean, I've had so many times where people would be very offended by a joke that I think is completely innocuous, and then at the same time, they'll just love a joke that I'm like, that's way too hardcore. We can't pull that off.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's why we do so many test screenings, because, you know, the process that we do is early on, we put together a cut of the movie, and then we screen it for people off the street, like, you know, 300 people, and we record their laughs and then get their feedback. And then we do that every, like, 2 to 3 weeks for months. So it allows us to go, like, well, those jokes didn't work. Let's flip in these. Let's try this. Let's try that. It is kind of mathematical the way you work it, just because, you know, we're making movies to try to entertain the largest swath of the audience that you can. And so, you know, you really need to make sure that stuff works. Because, as one of my editors say, you never want the premiere to be your first test screening.
It's funny to think that there are all these people who attended screeners who've seen versions of your movies that are even grosser and more profane scenes than ended up in the final cut. Like, I was at the Grove last week, and man, I saw Kristen Wiig. I don't even know what you probably cut left on the cutting room floor.
I'm telling you, there were some cuts that were extremely gross. I mean, Kristen, even when we were putting that dress shop scene, we're going to shoot it. She was very nervous about it. And, you know, Judd Apatow and I said to her, look, we're going to shoot everything. We're going to shoot stuff that's too much, but we will not put anything in the movie that is not good.
Yeah, there's that bridesmaid scene where all the bridesmaids go and they have bad Brazilian food for lunch. And then they go to a bridal shop, and we can all imagine what happens next if you haven't seen it.
Yes.
Megan, are you okay?
Oh, you got food poisoning from that restaurant, didn't you?
No, I had the same thing that she had, and I feel fine.
Oh, my. Okay.
Oh, no.
But there's a delicacy even in directing those scenes and assembling them, I imagine, because, you know, there was a back and forth about not making the characters seem too pathetic or playing them completely for laughs and somehow walking that edge of having empathy for them as well as being able to chuckle. What are some things you do to kind of get that sort of cut?
Well, you have to face it just from the very beginning, even from the writing. The mistake is to go, like, what's just the most outrageous thing we can do just to shock the audience? You're really on thin ice when you do that. But what you do is go, like, okay, here's the thing we want to illustrate. And with that scene in particular, it was like, okay, here's a woman who's in a battle with a woman who's much richer than her. She doesn't have any money. So she's going to take them to a restaurant she can afford, but she's going to kind of pass it off like it's a great place, even though she kind of knows it's not a great place. You know, and then there's going to be consequences to this. And, you know, to us, the funniest thing was always not, okay, they're going to be just throwing up and going to the bathroom everywhere. It was, what happens when everything is about to go wrong and everybody around you is trying to pretend it's not happening?
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. So then then the fun is to go, like, okay, now how can we illustrate this very human and relatable point in the most outrageous way possible?
Well, look, it's time for the Paul Feig is a Champion of Female-Led Comedies question.
Ah,
are you ready for that?
Bring it on.
All right. We were just talking about Bridesmaids, which had a nearly all-female cast, and it was really successful. And then there are lots of other movies you've made that feature women. And what's great about them is that they don't feature typical Hollywood stereotypes, like the woman trying to get pregnant before it's too late. I wonder, with the success of Bridesmaids, have you felt a freedom to write more honest characters?
Yeah, I mean, it comes to my obsession in storytelling is I love female friendships and I love professional women. And I always feel like those are the two things that just never got shown in movies. Because like you say, it was always a romantic comedy where it's about finding a guy, you know, or the thing that I always hated for so long is that Hollywood always moralized with these movies in which it was basically the story was you've got to choose between your job or your happiness, which I always found so offensive because I know so many women who are professionals who are happy. They're happily married. They have a family and they love their work, you know, but it was always this weird kind of judgment that was coming down from the storytellers. You know, look, I love a good romantic comedy, and I'm hoping to do some of those, too. But I never want that to be the main motivation for any female character that I portray.
One of the actors that you're closely associated with is Melissa McCarthy. And I think a lot of people agree, she's one of the funniest humans we have.
Yes.
Can we talk for a moment about her Sean Spicer impersonation?
Oh, the greatest thing ever.
We all watch it on Saturday Night Live and we all giggle, but you're a professional, a writer, director, former comedian. What is it about her that makes that impression sing? I mean, it's just so funny and it feels so right.
It is so take no prisoners, and it's also just spot on for what sketch and caricature and comedy should be, which is you take the things that are the most either irritating or funny or surprising about a character, and then you blow them up. But what's so funny about her is just the rage is so funny. And I mean, Melissa is, nobody can be meaner and angrier funny than Melissa McCarthy. And she's found the perfect conduit because Sean Spicer, you know, he's backed off. Honestly, he's tried to behave himself so much, but he laid the groundwork when he did that very first press conference where he was defending, you know, the attendance of the inauguration. And so, his goose is cooked after that, because once you do something you're known for, that becomes a thing we parody endlessly.
All right. Well, I just have a couple more questions for you. This is just a small thing. When I went to see Snatched, there was this little trailer before the movie where the two stars, Amy Schumer and Goldie Hawn, thanked the audience for, quote, coming to the movies. Do you know what I'm speaking
of?
Yeah,
I've seen that. No, I love it. Yeah,
I've never seen anything like that. Were you aware of it? And like, what was the rationale behind that?
I was not aware of it when it was being done. I only knew about it afterwards. I love it because, you know, the art of people going to the movies is slowly dying a little bit. I mean, unless it's for the giant tentpole superhero things. But we engineer these movies, these comedies, for an audience. I mean, that's why we do so many test screenings, and that's why we record laughs, and we listen to them back in the room and hear, oh, where's it going up? Where's it going down? Where we didn't need to let the energy, you know, flag? Where do we have to? That? And so the idea of if people just go like, oh, I'll just wait till it's out on, you know, home video, you lose that great experience of sitting in an audience and hearing those laughs. That's every much as important as being in a big theater to see giant special effects. And honestly, I think it's more important because the more we lose that group experience and that connection to humanity, especially through laughing and positive moments, you know, that we just become more and more isolated. So we do need to thank the audience who do show up and hope that they'll keep showing up.